I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I'm the dude, so that's what you call me.
Let's go get sushi and not pay.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hoo-ah!
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Furious Cinema Podcast. I'm Pete Roberts, and I'm here with my co-host, Sebastian Hasselbeck. Hey, Seb, how you doing?
Hi, how's it going, Pete? Happy New Year.
It's going good. Yeah, Happy New Year to you, too. This is our fourth episode. It's great to be back. Finally, we took a little bit of a break there. So, this is going to be like our 2021 wrap-up episode where we kind of go over all the new movies that we've seen and older movies that we've discovered and just kind of go over those and explain what we liked about them and that type of stuff. So,
yeah, I mean,
pretty fun.
The way I see it, last year was, I mean, obviously it was another kind of shitty year, but in terms of movies, I thought it was, I watched some fantastic new ones. You watched some fantastic new ones and we made some discoveries and rediscoveries.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I mean, we both brought 10 titles and we're going to go through them, old and new movies. And we're going to see and add some home video recommendations in the end as well. And we both had really fun compiling our lists, comparing notes and reminiscing and looking back at what we saw last year.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good year. I mean, I saw, how many movies did you actually see from like, you have your Letterboxd list. How many movies did you watch this year?
Yeah, this probably includes documentaries, but it's 506 or so.
Holy cow. 506?
That's what it says.
Damn. I think mine was 456.
Yeah, that's close.
That's pretty good. That, I mean, that's a pretty good chunk of movies.
Yeah, last year was probably my record. And I do watch a lot of crap too, but
you watch a lot of like Netflix stuff and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, Netflix movies, straight to video movies. And then, you know, that makes it a little hard sifting through it and finding the nuggets, I want to say. But, you know,
still. You know how it's like, that was a lot of movies to like have to go through and like, and then come up with five. It's like, you know what I mean? That was like a pretty good, you know, kind of tough to do, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, also we're not voting for the Academy Awards, which is,
we
just want to present some that stood out for us for
one. Yeah, these are just reasons. I mean, and also we're not like, I'm trying not to like get into a thing where I'm recommending movies to people out of my picks. These are just the movies that like I enjoyed the most, like personally. I'm you know what I mean, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we also for our listeners, we also made sure that we don't have the same titles on both our lists. So this is actually going to be 20 distinct titles that we're going to mention and go into just a little bit of why we like them. Yep. And
who wants to start? Should I start or?
Yeah, you go ahead. You do first one. So let's get into it.
Okay, so my number five pick out of the new ones is Sweet Thing, which is directed by Alexander Rockwell. And I had been a fan of his film In the Soup. That was from 1992. But I hadn't seen any other films by him. So when I saw he had a new film out, I really wanted to see it. So, and it's reminiscent of like older films like The 400 Blows and The Little Fugitive. Have you seen those? They're sort of about like younger people. And it stars Will Patton, Karen Parsons, and Alexander Rockwell's kids, Lana and Nico. And the dad is played by Will Patton, and he's been in like a lot of movies over the years. Like you might have seen him in After Hours or No Way Out. He was in those. But he plays like this like drunk, and he has a job as a Santa Claus, and like he's just a total mess. And the daughter is like, you know, just like a little kid, like a teenager. And she has to like kind of like be the parent of the situation and take care of him. And then, you know, and her younger brother, too. That's played by her real life younger brother, Nico. So it has like this chaotic dynamic going on. And that kind of like pulls you into the story right off the bat. and you're just wondering what's going to happen with this messy situation. But then the dad gets thrown in jail, so the kids have to go stay with their mother, and she's really messed up too. And that's played, she's played by Karen Parsons. I knew her from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And she's like, oh, yeah. You know, she's like messed up. You might have seen her on that show. She played like Hillary, I think, on that show. You know, and but she lives in a beach house with her boyfriend, and he's like a total loser, and he just abuses them all. And so they're like, you know, so they go from one messed up situation to the other messed up situation, and they're like, and then something happens, and the kids take off on their own, and they kind of have an adventure, and they're kind of free of like all their problems. They meet some like different people on, you know, it sort of becomes like a road movie. Like they go off, like, I think they steal a car or something, and they go off. And so they're free for a while. And that's like, you know, another little section of the movie that's really fun. And, you know, it makes you feel like you're kind of like free too, from all this stuff that's going on. So they mm-hmm. have like a good time, like with this, I think they meet up with another kid, and they kind of go off on like this little adventure. But it's just a really beautifully directed little indie film on a small scale. And it's just engaging, and it pulls your heartstrings, and it delivers an emotional slice of life story about this dysfunctional family trying to get through their trials and tribulations. And there's like a little nod to In the Soup at the opening of the film. If you've seen that movie, you'll catch the little reference from In the Soup. But I didn't know it was actually filmed in New Bedford, Mass. I didn't even realize. I thought it was like New York or something, but that's pretty cool because that's like in the same state I'm in. So that was pretty neat. I really enjoyed it. And it's not like epic or anything. It's just this like nice little story about this family. And the song, the Van Morrison song, Sweet Thing, is sort of like the unofficial theme of the film. If you've heard that song before, it's just like a nice little movie. Mm-hmm. But I just was really like, I really thought it was a great little film, and enjoyed it. Like out of all the films I watched, out of this new year, I was out of 2021. I mean, that was like one that really like stuck with me. So,
yeah, I like the little ones, the indies that have.
Yeah, that's
a,
it's that's
what, emotional impact. And
right, that's sort of like it's going back to those ones that you love, like in the 90s, like those little 90s indie films. It's sort of like a throwback to those, and I've always liked those too. As much as I like the blockbuster action movies and like, you know, the genre films, I've always liked those. Like, you know, if it's like Jim Jarmusch or, you know, whatever, Alexander Rockwell or someone else, I just like those types of films too. So that's just
and,
like
and Rockwell was. Favorite. Rockwell was also one of the four directors of Four Rooms, right?
Sundance. Yeah, he was. Yep. He was from he was in Four Rooms. He was one of the directors. It was Quentin Tarantino, Alexander Rockwell, and Robert Rodriguez. And then who was the other one? Was it Allison Anders, I think?
Allison Anders. Yeah, right.
That was their little four room, like little quadrilogy movie. That was pretty good. I haven't seen that in a long time. But yeah, he was one of them. And I guess Alexander Rockwell was also like in. That remember on the Reservoir Dogs DVD, there was the Class of 1992 extra, and like they kind of talked about like the people in Sundance that were at 1992, like, and he was one of those directors from back then. So it was like kinda, that was kind of cool, like a cool connection to that too.
Alumni.
Yeah, just a nice little movie. It was in black and white, by the way. This Sweet Thing, and it was just really, it was shot really beautifully, and I just really liked it. I liked the characters, and you know, it was just a like a little nice little story. So that was my number five pick.
Okay, that's pretty cool, because my next title up on my five list is also black and white, and it's called Passing.
Passing.
And yeah. I liked it because. You know, obviously, I'm a sucker for black and white. I always like it when a movie is able to strip like some sensory aspect and tell a story where you don't need eye candy in terms of, you know, colors and everything, but, you know, strip everything away and work a lot with shadows and light. Right. And this movie, obviously, I'm not sure if you heard of it, is it deals with race, obviously, and it's a very delicate. I want to say a parable about race in a way, as there's two characters where the race is kind of it's kind of set on its head, where this one character who's obvious to the audience is a black person, and the other person is also a black person, but they move around in different social circles,
right?
And the story explores kind of what that actually means for how other characters around these two characters perceive of them in terms of race. And it's a really I want to say emotional and also very delicate and, of course, controversial story that I think is really well emphasized by the use of light and shadow and white and black, and not just as a stylistic device, but also, you know, as a constant metaphor on camera. So that's why I liked it. And
it left
an impression. It left a real impression on me, even though, I mean, you could probably go into like the politics of it and whatever. And
right.
That's not my main concern. But as a movie, I thought it was really, really amazing.
Yeah. I think like most of the time when I watch movies, I think what happens is I'll get like an immediate like connection with the film, or I just don't. I mean, sometimes that's wrong. Sometimes that works out wrong. Like sometimes like you'll find that like you miss something and you should go back and watch it again or something. But usually with Sweet Thing, I put the movie on in like about 5 minutes. I knew I was into the film, and I knew I wanted to watch the whole thing. You know what I mean? Sometimes that doesn't happen. That sounds like it happened with Passing with you. You know what I mean? You start watching it, you're like, okay, I'm locked into this and I'm going to watch it. Something affects your psyche or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Your movie watching, you know, interest. So you do that. So
yeah. And the other check is, do you still remember the movie 6 months later?
Yeah.
or have you completely forgotten about it?
Yeah. I usually remember, you know, if I really like something, I'll remember. I remember this movie, of course, but it's been like, you know, it's been a while. So I had to, when it comes to like actually explaining the movie, I had to like write some notes down just so I like could remember like the, you know, to make every sure I get everything right on there. And, you know, remember all the points of the film. But who directed that? Was that Rebecca Hall that directed that one?
I think so. Yeah. And
that was like her first movie, I think, too.
The star is forgetting the name. She's in a lot of movies.
Yeah, what's her name? I know her from a TV show. I can't remember her name either. Damn it. But was it Tessa Thompson in there too, or
yeah,
was that?
Yeah, exactly.
That was one of them, and then the other girl is I can't remember the other girl's name. Sorry, but
the other one's not so well known, I think.
Yeah, it's like close. I don't know. I don't know. I can't remember.
No, but, I recommend checking it out. It's of course a very I want to call it an intellectual movie.
Yeah, it sounds good. I'd like it.
Gets you to think and stuff.
Yeah, it sounds really good to me. I'd like to check it out. Should I go on to number four?
Yep.
Okay, my number four pick is Summer of Soul, and that's directed by Amir Questlove Thompson. And that's like really like an amazing time capsule documentary about the 1969 Harlem Culture Festival. And that was held in originally Mount Morris. Now it's Marcus Garvey Park. But it features amazing footage and performances from artists like Stevie Wonder, Mahalia Jackson, Nina Simone, The Fifth Dimension, The Staple Singers, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Blinky Williams. I wasn't too familiar with Blinky Williams. And then Sly and the Family Stone in the Chambers Brothers. And the whole doc is really amazing. But the band I loved seeing most was Sly and the Family Stone, because it's really funny. You're like watching like, you know, all these great acts like do their thing and stuff. And it's cool to see like, you know, that footage from like that time and place, and, you know, just to see like what people were like, looked like back then and stuff, and the atmosphere. But then Sly and the Family Stone show up and it's like aliens land, and like everybody's like, what the hell is this? It was just like, you could tell like the whole place was like, what is going on with this? And they just like, you know, it just really stood out to me, but I loved the music. It was just awesome. And that was just like that was one of the highlights of the whole film for me. But a little background on the film, Hal Tulchin, a television producer, recorded 40 hours of footage of this festival on videotape, and it was placed in a basement where it was like it just stayed there for 50 years. And Questlove said that he only used around 15% of all the footage, which is, that's pretty crazy to think he only used 15% out of like all the stuff that was there. But it was just a really awesome experience. I just really, for like a music documentary, I haven't seen that many that I really loved, and this one was excellent. It was just really cool to see that time and all those great acts and stuff way back then, and really cool. And another doc that I have to mention is the Beatles new, the Get Back doc, you know, the documentary with the Beatles. And it's, I'm not even a huge fan of them, but it was just an awesome like thing to see, like when they were younger and like working together, making the music and see the artistic process and everything. It was just really awesome. So I recommend that one too, as like a little extra bonus recommendation. Mm-hmm. Well, not recommendation. I'm not recommending, but I'm just going to say, I love that one too.
And would you say that Summer of Soul is a little bit like that Woodstock movie?
Yeah.
It is like that.
It's almost like that on a small scale. Like, so if they were like in a, like a little park, it's like a smaller little park. It's not like a huge, you know, it's of course, when you watch Woodstock, it's like half the state. It looks like that it's, you know, filling up like, you know, that much room. But this one is like a, on a smaller scale, but it's sort of the same idea. And it's just like black artists and stuff. And it's just like a black, you know, like a, looking back at their favorite artists and stuff. It really neat. It was just really a good time. I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good.
That's my number four pick.
Okay. Let me see which one I go to. Mine are not in order, so now I'm making up the order as I go. So I'll do Nomadland as my next title. And this is obviously kind of famous because it won an Oscar and whatever. Mm-hmm. I liked it because... I mean, obviously, I like road movies, and in a way, it's a road. It's a road movie, and it's a beautifully shot road movie, and also the protagonists, because it's about nomads, as the title says, but it's nomads out of choice and nomads out of necessity, and these kind of lines get blurred a little bit along the way. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, obviously, it's one of those movies that shows kind of the other side of America, you know, not just the glitzy parts, but kind of like the
underbelly.
Yeah, I mean, underbelly sounds a little.
That
little
sounds too much.
But you see them work in an Amazon warehouse.
Right. It's more of like the. Yeah, these people that are like on the move, and they're not rich people, of course. They don't have like a normal, like, you know, domestic life, you know, that's like they're living in trailers or whatever they're doing. And, you know, that's
it. But interestingly, like, you know, when you leave the movie theater, you feel like, you know, they might not be rich in the material sense, but they have a richness in something else. They have a kind of the freedom that, you know, others might not have, even though they have a, you know, bigger bank account in the first place. But, you know,
stability. There's no, they're kind of like always on the move and stuff. And but they want it that way, though.
Yeah, they want it that way, and they wouldn't have it any other way, even though it means living in kind of precarious living situations. But they can just pack up and go and watch the sunset from some RV parking spot or whatever. And
sounds fun to me.
I mean, Chloe Zhao was kind of the celebrated director because it's just really beautiful. It's not like one of those low budget little things, but it actually looks really, really nice. And you get to see parts of the country that you don't usually see. So I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Going to the bathroom in a bucket in the RV, stuff like that. That was kind of fun. She was really good in that, though. Frances McDormand. She's always the new
what's her name?
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep. Yeah, she can play anything.
She's the I like that movie too. I haven't, you know, I didn't put it on my list, but it was definitely like it was a very good movie. I liked, you know, the reality, the, you know, that coming from that different type of perspective, like of people on that live that way. I'd never like had seen stuff. I love road movies, but I hadn't seen like that specific story told before.
Yeah,
but
and also her relationship to her family and the way they look at her lifestyle, stuff like that.
I think she's
there's all these little things in there, because they don't understand why she's doing this on purpose. Without giving anything away, it's not like she absolutely has to live on the road. I mean, there's other people that don't have much money, but they're not on the road, but she's on the road.
And there's one little scene that's like pretty telling about the character. Like, she goes, it's like one of those things, like she's like at some place and there's like a little dog, and I don't know if it's like a little stray dog, and like you think that she might like take the dog with her or something, but she just looks at the thing and walks away. It's like, it's one of those things like where in another movie, like, you know, the person would like take the dog with them and like, you know, they'd make a little friendship out of it, but it's like that's not what she does. I thought that was sort of a cold thing to do, but it kind of like tells about the character, like, you know what I mean? She's like, I don't even want to like get connected to this animal.
Yeah, because it would be something that would, you know, would tie her down.
Yeah, which is weird. I don't know. It was just, but the movie was really good, though.
All right, you're up.
Okay. Number three on my list is Pig, directed by Michael Sarnowski. And it stars Nicolas Cage as Robin Feld, a reclusive ex-chef and widower who works as a truffle farmer. And he lives all alone, like in a cabin deep in the Oregon woods. And his only real contact with the outside world is a guy named Amir, played by Alex Wolff. And he's like a young hotshot supplier of food ingredients to high-end restaurants in Portland. One night, men show up at Robin's door and they beat him up and they steal his pet truffle pig. And this pig is like really his best friend. And it like, you know, hurts him deeply, like when this happens. So he just sets out to go find the pig again. And that brings him back to Portland, like where he used to work years earlier. Something happened and like, you know, he kind of like became a recluse and like lived out and he starts living in the woods. But when it starts, you like expect him to like be like a John Wick. That's sort of like what you expect from the movie. Like you think like, oh yeah, okay, now he's going to go get revenge like John Wick or something because they stole his pig, because it's sort of like the same. If you watch John Wick, it's like the dog and, you know, it's you think that. But that's not really what happens. Like you think that's going to, he's going to go around beating people up and try to get like, you know, revenge. But that's not where it goes. But so like he's more of like an artist, like this character is more of an artist that doesn't want to hurt other people. And also, as you're watching the story, like you'll notice all the main characters are like damaged in some way. Like, so it's like it's not just him, like everybody has some like thing that they're coping with. And like even like, you know, the quote unquote villain of the movie is like has some problem and he's and Robin is like trying to like do with things in a different way. So there's no like explosive cage rage going on. It's not like, it's like the opposite of a film like Mandy, which is like no holds barred psychedelic cinema, I call it. This is more like a subdued introspective kind of acting from Nicolas Cage. He hasn't, you know, so we're so used to seeing him in like, you know, action movies and doing all that crazy stuff that he does that we still like that. But this is like about quieter moments between the characters where we see like what's really going on inside them. And it's also a film that celebrates the healing power food can have on our damaged souls. And so instead of going all John Wick, he goes all Jacques Pepin. And through his culinary arts, he tries to help others and himself heal these old wounds. And he's, you know, mm-hmm. Nick Cage has always been a favorite of actor of mine because he loves all kinds of movies and genres. He can do the dramas. He can do a comedy or a big blockbuster action film. So, you know, I just was really impressed by this performance from him. And it was like a nice like departure from like what we've been seeing from him, like in other films.
Isn't there also a movie coming up where he's playing himself?
Yeah. It's the unbearable weight, the unbearable, what's it called? The unbearable, weight of talent. Oh, I can't remember the whole.
Yeah. I think that's it. Yeah.
I can't remember it, but it's, yeah, I want to see that one too. It's what the hell is the name of it? The unbearable weight of talent. That's not what
I think it is.
Something like that. I have to look that up, but yeah, but that's going to be a good one. And that's that movie. If people don't know what it is, it's like some guy is like a super fan of Nicolas Cage. So he hires him to like play all his different roles or something. I can't remember the exact plot line, but it's something like that. So he's going to be playing like, you know, everybody from, you know, High McDonough to, you know, to Castor Troy to, you know, all those different characters, you know, to Cameron Poe and, you know, all his most famous characters. So that'll be
fun.
Cool. That'll be awesome. Like, you know, for fans of Nicolas Cage, which we are. So it'll be really cool.
Yeah.
And so that's my number three. Did I go through that too fast or what?
No. That's great. So let me pick a smaller one for my next one. And that would be The Wolf Hour. Wolf. And it's not only small, but I don't think a lot of people had heard of it. It's kind of like a chamber piece sort of movie. Like it takes place in one room. It stars Naomi Watts. It takes place during a hot summer in the city. And also I think there's like riots. I think it takes place in, I don't even know what decade. It looks a little bit like it would take place in the 70s. Yeah. But anyways, it's about a writer who's struggling with some not specifically defined psychological or career or trauma problem, something. So she locks herself up in her room. She doesn't want to go outside. So
that sounds familiar.
Sounds
like us.
Yeah, sounds like us now. But
these days.
She doesn't want to go outside, but yet there's some like kind of apocalyptic atmosphere going on outside. Yeah. One, because it's a super hot summer, so the heat and humidity and you know, people, you know, when it gets really hot, people, you know, start losing their minds also. And then there's riots and whatever. And then, you know, piece by piece, we see kind of that stuff that she's built around her as a little protective shell being peeled back. And, you know, as the movie progresses, we learn more about why it is that she locks herself up in the room and what it is that will or will not, you know, eventually get her to leave the house. And I like these kind of chamber pieces.
Does she have like agoraphobia or something like that? Or
it might be part of that. And
yeah.
Another part I think is more, it might be a certain kind of trauma or something that happened in her career.
Yeah.
And Naomi Watts, I think she really knocks this one out of the park. I mean, obviously if all you have is four walls and yourself, I mean, she had that convincing thing going for her. And
she was able to hold the movie just by her, with her acting and stuff. And like, you know, make
absolutely.
It just, yeah. That's
but also
what you want.
Like as minimalistic as the movie is, it's still impressive in terms of cinematography and atmosphere. What I really liked was this, you have the feeling like something's coming, and whether it's not a nuclear war or anything,
like,
but
it's like a claustrophobic.
You see out the window and there's like this brooding atmosphere, and you can actually feel kind of the heat of that summer night. And you know, I thought that was really, really, really cool for that.
Yeah.
Or I want to say mostly for that reason, because if it didn't have that kind of apocalyptic atmosphere, it would have been just like a boring, you know, one man.
There has to be something like to make it like more like claustrophobic, you know what I mean? Like something's going on, like that you're trying to like figure out what it is. And like, you know,
so I would say that's kind of a hidden, like a, you know, hidden
gem.
Gem or like a overlooked recommendation of last year. It might have even come out the year before. I'm not exactly sure. Okay.
Who directed that one? Was it like a newer director, or?
I think it's a newer director. It might actually have been a first time effort. I would have to check, but we'll put that in the show notes. But it was really, really impressive.
All right, cool. That's The Wolf Hour, it's called. Yeah,
The Wolf Hour.
Sounds good. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sounds good to me. Okay, so my number two pick is Nobody, and that was directed by Ilya Naishuller. I think that's how you say his name. And this was, like, as far as modern badass action movies go, this one was top notch for me. I loved it. Like, really. It's like sort of, if you've seen movies like A History of Violence or John Wick, maybe a little Mr. Majestic or Death Wish are thrown in too, but Bob Odenkirk, who we don't really usually think of like as an action hero guy. He's for, like, you know, you Better Call Saul, and like, you know, he's done like, he's more of like on the comedy side of stuff usually, but he plays the main character, and his name is Hutch Mansell. And he's like a mild mannered family man who works at a metal fabrication company. And he turns out it's like, he's a former assassin for the CIA. So it's like this classic master killer that's given up the life and goes into hiding, but is forced back to being their former badass self to set things right. And like, for a brand new film that wasn't a sequel, a reboot, a remake, it really delivered across the board for me, which is pretty rare these days. It's like, you don't see many movies that aren't like, you know, in that category where it's like, you really like love it. Just, you know, especially action movies. It's tough to like see action movies where you're like, I hope there's a sequel to this movie. It's like, you know, it's always like, you know, a sequel or a reboot or remake of older stuff. And this is like brand new. So, but it's like, there's something about stories with like the everyman that's like trying to be a good guy leading a quiet life. And then he's like messed with, and he turns into like a superhero that like just gets your adrenaline going. I think we can all identify with that. And it's like a universal fantasy to like to be a normal person and also a superhero that can take on everything and win. There's like lots of exciting action and confrontations. And it also, if you've seen Collateral, it's almost like Hutch is like, he's not as bad as Vincent, but it's almost like, what if Vincent decided to retire and live the quiet life? That's like sort of like what Hutch is like, but he's not as cold-blooded. He's not as cold-blooded as that guy. He's not like, you know, Vincent was like, you know, like a robot almost in Collateral. You know what I mean? He just like did stuff, and like, there was no like, you know, he was like a psychopath basically, but Hutch is just like, you know, he has like those types of like skills, but he's like trying to be like just a normal guy again. But there's like that whole aspect of it is what makes it really like fun to watch. I think it's just, it like gets you into it. Cause then you get like, cause like when the movie starts, like something happens and like in his family kind of see him as like a wimp. And he's like, you know, and you don't know, like, you're like, why is this guy like not even like getting involved in this? But then when he does, it's like, okay, now we know why he's like total, like he's trying to like hold back and stuff, which is really cool. I just love that part of the story. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it was excellent. You know, the direction was really great and the supporting cast was excellent. And, you know, lots of cool action sequences and like those confrontations and, you know, just really cool. If you like those types of movies, like, you know, Death Wish and, you know, History of Violence, you'll definitely like this one a lot too. So that one really stood out to me as far as action movies go. So that was my number two pick.
Cool. So for the next one, I'm going to go with The White Tiger. It takes place in India, and it's kind of a story about kind of the class system and all the prejudices and all the shit you have to put up with if you're like from a lower class and trying to break out of that lower class. Mm-hmm. And what happens if you decide to, you know, break out of it and not playing by the rules, and maybe you'd actually turn into someone who then treats others that are from an even lower class than you are, maybe the same way that you're treated by people from up a higher class. Oh, and I thought the way it was just a daring and like no holds barred portrayal of that society in a way where sometimes you sit there and you watch it and you think, is this supposed to be funny? But then you're like, no way, this is not funny. This is just wow. And the movie just keeps on going. And it's, you know, it's really smart in a way that it doesn't try to be like a bummer or like a documentary or like a Oscar bait ish kind of movie, but it's kind of wild. You learn a lot about India in a way, and it's also like, so the social commentary is so spot on and so vicious. And there's no heroes really in the story, but
it's like everybody's like out for themselves or something.
in a way, yeah. It's kind of like a survival story, like
that's pretty cool.
Like almost like Darwin-esque, but it's about this guy who's, you know, he's from a poor village and there's all kind of things that are expected of him, where, you know, you go to the big city, you work as, I don't know, like a shoe shiner or a cab driver or something like that. But he's like, no, I'm not gonna, that's not what I'm gonna do. and then you go off and follow him on this like adventure through the Indian like caste or class system. And it's just wild. It's absolutely one of my, you know, for the purposes of this, is my top two, like this new movie discovery. And I was just, I mean, you're so taken aback by the shit you see in this movie.
That's pretty cool. And was it like an Indian director? I don't know who I think I've heard of the movie, but I haven't, like, you know, I don't know the director.
I think it's an Indian director, but I didn't really do a lot of name lookups. And also there's, I think there's one of the names that are like recognizable, I think, is Priyanka Chopra shows up.
Oh yeah. And, I know that is,
you might recognize a few more faces.
Indian cinema very much. I'm not like,
they could also be maybe Indian Americans or something, but it's actually, I would say it's probably better not to recognize a lot of folks, because then
it makes it seem like they're real people, like, as opposed to like actors or, you know, that, you know, stars or something. That's a good idea,
you know. And as I said, and in the end it's like, okay, who's now picking on who in that class kind of system? And when you're through with the movie, you're like, wow, this is just wild.
and even when you get to the being like on the higher class, then there's even another class above yours that you have to deal with, like type stuff, like all that type of
so it's that's a really interesting like social study.
That is pretty cool. It sounds good.
Yeah,
I like that one. I'll have to check that one out too. Okay.
So what's your number one?
My number one pick is, this is really going to shock everyone that's listening, if they're listening to this, but it's, guess what it is? It's Spider-Man No Way Home. And, you know, but this is like, you know, to me, it's like, I know, like, the whole, we've had the discussion about superhero films and, you know, we could even like do like an episode, like just discussing that, like our views on stuff like that. But like, for me, like, honestly, it was my most emotional movie experience out of all these these top five, because we're talking about 20 years going back to Sam Raimi's first Spider-Man film in 2002. And I'm still like a huge fan of those movies. It's just, you know, this was like before the whole like superhero, you know, movie stuff started, like, you know, way back then. So, you know, that whole debate about it was more of like, you know, people were just going to see the movies. There was no one had any problems or anything like that. But now, like, you know, but the way they told this story and they brought in the multiverse aspect with Doctor Strange and the older Spider-Man villains, there's also a part of the story that you don't quite expect when it comes to the villains. Like, you think it's just going to be like the standard, you know, Spider-Man fighting the villains, like, you know, through the movie. But there's something that they add to that, and it just makes the movie more makes it feel more like fresh and like, you know, it makes the characters, all the characters, like, really even better than they are. But you know, everything in the movie, the storytelling, the special effects, the dramatic moments, the humor, everything just worked. And it's also sort of a bittersweet film for me because it really marked the end of my movie fan life as a Spider-Man fan, because it's sort of like the culmination of all that, like all those years. So that was like a little bittersweet thing for me. But out of all the characters, I think Willem Dafoe was really, like, really stood out in this film, because he plays the Green Goblin. And he's like, he can be like super sinister on one hand and cruel, but then, like, when he plays, like, when he's Norman Osborn, he's like this, like, helpless, lost soul. So it's like you get this, like, mixture of, like, it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and the Joker, like, all wrapped up in one. And it's just an outstanding performance. And that's, like, one of the highlights of the movie for me. And then there's, like, other stuff. I don't really want to spoil it. There's other things people should go see it. If they're fans at all, they should just check it out anyways. And I'm sure a lot of people have, because it's doing pretty good. But you know, like, when it comes to the superhero films, like, you know, people want good stories when it comes to any type of movie. It's like, then, you know, like, when they have some big battle, there's all that stuff going on. It's fun and everything. But the whole reason I'm there is because I care about the characters as people first. It's not just to see the effects and stunts. It's like any story. Everything is built up from the ground up. So if you don't have a solid foundation, it just doesn't hold up. And Marvel has great character-based stories that just happen to be in the superhero genre. So that's, like, my basic opinion on the discussion. But, you know, everybody has their own views of that. So, but I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, like, if you don't have those good characters and you don't care about the characters, all the action stuff and, like, you know, the swinging around and stuff, that's just, you know, filler stuff. So you have to have the character work first and the great acting first and, like, you know, the human story first. And then the other stuff is like a nice little, you know, cherry on the top of it. You know what I mean? So that's the way I feel about all those movies. So, and you have to be invested too. If you're not invested, obviously you're not going to, like, you know, you're not going to care about it. So, but that's my number one pick, Spider-Man.
Cool. I might have actually seen the one before where they go on a class trip. I think that's,
yeah, that was that Far From Home. Yeah, the one with Mysterio. Yeah, that this one. I think out of the three, like, you know, you've probably seen two of them. Have you seen the first one? The first MCU one? I don't know.
I don't know.
But I think if you didn't love the second one, I think this one is, well, would probably be your favorite, like, out of those two, you know, or out of two or three, if you, whatever you've seen. I think it's, like, the most emotional, and you know, even if, I think it's the type of movie, like, even if you're not, like, a diehard fan, like, you'll be like, you might get a little emotional during it, because it'll, like, remind you of certain things and stuff. But that's how it worked for me. So that was my number one pick out of, you know, the most emotional, like, really emotional experience I've had through the whole 2021. So,
wow.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, thanks.
So my number one should probably not come as a surprise, and it's Denis Villeneuve's Vision of Dune.
Oh, yeah. I knew it was going to be Dune. I knew it was going to be Dune.
And I have to say I had never seen the 80s Dune.
Yeah,
and also I have not read any of the novels. So I went in there knowing roughly what it was about, and I played the video game back in the early 2000s or whatever. They had like a game.
Okay, I didn't even know that.
So I had like a general idea of, you know, the harvesting of the spice and all these things. But I have to say, this is a movie where I was slightly afraid that, you know, Denis Villeneuve's style and whatever, it would be something just for show, covering up like a lack of substance.
Right.
But I went in there and I would say, audio visually, this movie knocked me out. This absolutely blew me away. It's so gorgeous. The sound design and the music.
You have to see it in the theater.
I have to say, I saw it three times, once in IMAX. And it's just absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And it's only it tells only the first half of the first book. So you leave the theater and you're like, what? We have to wait another 3 years for this to continue?
There's gonna be another epic, you know, movie part two.
And I have to say though, the way they did it, all the visuals and the sound and everything, it adds so much like emotional depth to characters that are, by definition, because of the story, just small moving parts in a story that by itself is so epic.
Right. Story too.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean,
I saw the original one, so I know like kind of like, you know, the basic gist of it. So,
yeah. And I get why some people have their problems with it, but maybe they had different expectations. The first time I went in there with a friend who's an absolute Herbert nut, so he knew everything, really? And he was, yeah. So I was kind of looking at him whether he would like it or whether he wouldn't like it, and he absolutely loved it, also because it's so close to the book and so truthful to to the story.
So this one did they say this one was better, like more closer to the book than the David Lynch one or something? I didn't.
From what I've read, yes, because okay. Lynch took a lot of liberties along the way, and this one, I mean, it's just it takes more time, and it spends more on building that world, and by the time the credits roll, you're like, wow, absolutely fantastic, It's one of those rare movies where it could have gone really
the other way.
Wrong.
Yeah, I think it definitely could.
I think it was one of the most fantastic experiences I've ever had at a movie theater. That's in a long, long, long while. And obviously, everything in there is original. There's a lot of like references to like Apocalypse Now, whatever.
Awesome.
But it's just absolutely amazing. I thought they did a really, really excellent job. And I sat in there loving every bit of it, like the drums of the sound design and the ornithopter, whatever helicopter things they had, and the visuals and like the crazy characters and like the legends in the background. Because there's all these kinds of things that go on in that Frank Herbert universe that you might not be familiar with unless you have read like the novels, which I haven't. I think the craziest thing that they pull off is that they manage to convey the story and kind of fill in those little gaps without going into like half an hour flashbacks.
That's the tough part, I think.
And explanatory montages, whatever.
Yeah, that's the tough
part. You learn just enough to follow the story, and you absolutely get it. Because, you know, you see things in this movie that maybe they're just 5 minutes, and in the book that would probably cover many, many chapters.
Right.
And, you know, but for the purposes of the movie, you don't have to know all these things.
Right.
Maybe some things are just better left to your imagination.
Yep.
Like there's a whole thing about, you know, in the Dune universe, why there is no like artificial intelligence.
Okay.
And obviously, like for those who've read the book, there's a really elaborate explanation for that. And there's a lot of background and history that goes into explaining why in this story, which takes place many thousand years from now, they don't have artificial intelligence. You don't have to know that. The only thing you have to know is that they don't have it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like really good. Like they did the right things, like with the story. They didn't like overdo it or undertell it, or they kind of like let you fill in some stuff with your imagination, and then they filled in the most important details. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And also, it's not. It's a story that's in a way timeless because you have like power struggles and politics, and you have some references like the House of Atreides. They have, you know, certain things about them that remind you of, I don't know, Scotland or Spain or like a noble kind of place. And then you have like a secret society, and then you have, you know, all kinds of things, and you have religion factors in, and like jihad and revolutions, and
there's a lot of stuff to put into that story too.
Yeah, and a desert and a war over resources, and a story of oppression, and there's a bit of racism in there, and technology. It's just really awesome. Really, really fascinating.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I think I'd like that one too. I just haven't had a chance, and I haven't even been to the movie theater in like two or three years now. So it's been a while. So I don't know when I'm going to be able to, you know, go back and see something like that again. But
I guess, you know, I guess if you have a big screen and the surround sound system, that should be fine.
I'll have to do it at home, I guess. Watch it at home.
Maybe they do like a rerun when they come up with the next one, and you can do a double feature.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Do you have any like runners up or movies that you missed that you really wanted to see?
I'm trying to think if I don't know if I have anything written down or anything. Oh, crap. Let's see. Well, I saw a ton of movies in 2021. I was looking at the list and I saw like almost all the major movies. That was one of them I didn't see, but I saw like I saw a ton of stuff like Halloween. Like I saw like all those popular films, most of them. And I didn't, you know, I didn't really like that many movies out of 2021. I have to say, out of looking at my list, like if I'm being honest about it. And I had a lot of disappointments too. I don't know about you. I mean, I don't know what you saw. If you saw like all those like popular films, like, you know.
But, yeah, I'm always like, it always takes me a while to catch up with all the recent stuff. So I missed out on Last Night in Soho.
Yeah, I didn't see that one either. But did you see The Matrix?
I saw The Matrix, but I saw that just a week ago.
Yeah, and I saw it like a week or two ago.
I thought that was one of the biggest pieces of crap.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like, it's like when it comes to The Matrix, like I loved the first film, but like the sequels, I just never really got into. And this latest one was sort of like the same thing. I mean, like I was trying to give it a chance and I just like didn't work for me very much. I don't really care about I'm kind of over like that whole universe stuff. You know what I mean? I'm not really into it anymore.
Plus, but they're like over explaining it, and it's just lost.
Yeah, it's just I'm not invested in it. If you're like if you're not like totally invested in it, and you don't really go for it anymore, it just doesn't. You know, it's like whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
But yeah, I mean, so Last Night in Soho was one that I really wanted to see, and then one, you know, because we're both fans of Paul Verhoeven, I'm really looking forward to Benedetta.
Oh yeah, I got to see that one too. I haven't seen that either, but I saw Halloween Kills, and that was like a total letdown for me. Because I liked the previous one, but this one was like a total dud. I just didn't like. I thought it was dumb.
And there was two movies that I got that I almost put in my top five, and one was One Night in Miami.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's the one with like Malcolm X and
Muhammad, which I thought was fantastic. Yeah. And then also, very unlike me, Fatherhood with Kevin Hart.
Oh yeah, and another
because out of that genre, I thought is one of the best I've seen. It's just so sincere. Yeah.
And which one is it again? It's a
Fatherhood.
Oh yeah, I did see that movie, The Guilty. You know that Jake Gyllenhaal film where he's like the guy on the phone. Like, you know, that was pretty good.
Yeah, but it's a remake, and I've seen the original, so I'm not gonna watch this one because I already know how it is.
Okay, that was pretty good. I like that one. And then Red Rocket was pretty good. That's Sean Baker's new film. That was a good one. I didn't put it on my top five because I just saw it like a couple days ago. So I didn't I'm still trying to like figure out if I loved it, you know, that type of thing. But I liked that one a lot. And then Suicide Squad, I liked a lot, which is weird because I'm not a DC fan. And like, I don't really even like any of those characters that much. But James Gunn's like his style. You've seen Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, like what his stuff is like. You know what I mean? It's just like crazy craziness. And like, it's just I think the whole reason I'm a fan of him is just his humor just by itself is just, it just makes me laugh through the whole film. So that was another one I liked, but then there was like a couple other ones that I thought were like, really like that new, the new Steven Soderbergh movie. That was a total boring dud to me. The No Sudden Move.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that was boring as shit. And then Many Saints in Newark. I was really looking forward to that one. And that one just like really like kind of like disappointed me too. I had a lot of stuff I didn't really care for very much. I was looking forward to it. That's the whole, like what you were saying earlier, like you'll be looking forward to a movie and then like you'll watch and you'll be like, oh, what the hell happened here? I don't know. It's just, just like a dud. Like, I don't know. I can't help it. It's like, you know, you have your taste. Like I have my, like after like watching movies for 40 plus years, we all have, or whatever, you know, whatever age you are, like I have my taste now. So it's like, if something doesn't play for me, I'm just like, F this. I don't want to watch this. You know?
Yeah. I mean, why torture yourself?
No, I mean, it's like, forget that. So anyways.
Yeah. So what we're going to do now, we're going to go into our top five, like older movies,
New discoveries, older
discoveries, it could be rediscoveries. Also.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And this time I have mine in order.
Okay. Do you want to go first on this one?
Yeah, I can go first. So I'm going to start at the bottom. And one of the things that have been kind of a holdout that I finally got to see last year was Cece and Company.
Oh, yeah. We got to talk about like a little bit of some stuff. We've seen it. I've seen that. So I know all about that one.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean,
because I'm a biker movie fan. So
I like biker movies. And it featured in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yep.
And the soundtrack also popped up in Larry Bishop's Hell Ride.
Yep.
And with Joe Namath, and it's not a very like high quality biker movie.
A high quality biker movie in quotes.
Like high quality. Yeah, like doesn't even exist.
As opposed to like Stone Easy, Cold.
or like, yeah, it's not Easy Rider, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, but don't forget, but we have to be specific now. Easy Rider isn't actually a biker movie. It's not a biker gang movie. It's just like, you know, guys on motorcycles driving. If we're talking about biker movies, you're talking about like, you know, Hell Ride, Stone Cold, and, you know, Hell's Angels on Wheels and all that stuff.
Right.
But anyways,
But even in that kind of bunch of movies, it's probably not ranking very highly.
I like it. I mean, I do like CC and Company, but it's probably like not in my top five, I don't think. But it's like, it's a fun film. Most of those, I mean, you know, there's, you know, most of them, the ones I've seen, I like, but then there's like the other ones, there's other ones I've seen that are just like total, like boring, like, you know, it's like waste of time type stuff. But CC isn't one of them.
Yeah, this one's got a lot of heart and has a good soundtrack.
Yeah, and I like Joe Namath in it. It's kind of, you know, he's sort of like playing like a, you know, he's a biker and stuff, but he's sort of like, you know, even in his biker gang, he's still sort of like an outsider and stuff, like, you know, because William Smith is like the big dog in the group, and they kind of like butt heads and stuff. And, you know, I love that whole part of it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Anne Margaret, she's like great.
Yeah. No, and I'm happy I could finally. I mean, it's a kind of a bummer that you can't get it on like a nicely restored HD version, because all the versions you can get, and it's the same crap that's on YouTube. It's like a full screen.
I thought that was on Blu-ray. It's not on Blu-ray.
No, it's not. No.
Okay, I thought it was.
It's not on a proper DVD either. It's like one of those like gray market. Yeah.
Because I guess I've only seen it like on like kind of like a, you know, just that old version that you've probably seen, like just like kind of like a, you know, VHS or whatever, you know, copy. Yeah. It's like just blander.
And I'm not even sure if a, like a widescreen version exists, or maybe it was shot on 16 millimeter. I don't know. It's like,
I don't think it was shot on 16, but it
doesn't really look all that.
I think it was shot on like 35 millimeter, but.
Well, I hope someone digs a good copy up and restores it at some point, because I, you know, it's part of popular culture. So
yeah, it's a fun little biker movie. It's good. I'm trying to think if there's any sections in there that stand out. I don't know. I mean, I like when they go to like Cece and Anne Margaret go to like to the dance club, and they're like dancing around to that guy, was it Wayne Cochran and the CC Riders or something? I just like that little section.
Yeah, Wayne Cochran.
That's pretty good. But yeah, that's a good little discovery. That's a fresh discovery. That's not like a read.
Yeah, for me, it's a fresh discovery. So all the five on my list are fresh discoveries. Okay. I do have a few follow-ups that are rediscoveries. But
I think mine are all, my top five are all new discoveries too. But I'll go with my number five pick, and that's it's called Mike's Murder, and it was from 1984, and it's like it was directed by James Bridges, the guy that directed what else did he direct? Urban Cowboy, and you've seen The China Syndrome, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like one of my favorites, like, from way back. And then he also directed that movie September 30th, 1955, which was about like the kid like that's like obsessed with James Dean. That was like a really good movie. I saw like
a year ago. Isn't that one of the ones that Tarantino keeps raving about?
Yeah. And what's funny about that was I had seen the movie about like 6 months before I listened to that podcast. And I'm like, I wonder if like someone like Quentin Tarantino loves this movie. And then like 6 months later, he brought it up. I was like, I couldn't believe it. Was just a weird one of those coincidences. Like I was like, oh, holy crap. He has seen that movie and he knows it. And he brought it up on like the podcast or something. So I just thought that was cool, but I just never mentioned it because like, I figured whatever, no one cares about that. But I just, cause I saw the movie. It was one of those things. Like I was like wondering like if he had seen it or if it was one of his favorite movies or something, because it seems like something he would like, you know what I mean? Like once sometimes you'll see like movies like you'll think certain like directors will like are into or something, but anyways, that's just off topic. But so this Mike's Murder movie, I had heard about it, and it's set in Los Angeles, and focuses on a bank teller named Betty, and that's Deborah Winger, and she had been in Urban Cowboy like, you know, a few years before. That's like his other movie. And she had a one night stand with a young tennis instructor named Mike. And this like actor is really good. Mark, I think it's Keeloun. I don't know how to say it, but so they have a one night stand, and then a couple years go by, and like she doesn't see him again. But then like something happens where he like, he turns into a drug dealer, like in the, you know, after he stops doing like the tennis instructing, and, he makes like a bad deal, and then he gets back in touch with Betty, and like they kind of like see each other, but then he gets killed. I'm trying not, I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but so I'll, instead of saying every last detail of the movie, I'll just say like, she kind of, if you've seen the movie Blowout, I don't know if you've seen that movie Blowout, but you know how Jack Terry, he kind of like that event happens, and then he kind of like becomes like an amateur detective, and he kind of like tries to figure out like what happened and stuff. That's sort of like what she does. She like, you know, Mike gets killed, and then she kind of like wants to find out like what was his deal, because she didn't really know him that well. So she goes around to like all these people and tries to piece together the puzzle of like, you know, what he was, you know, what his whole thing was. But it's like this movie has this like haunting quality to it. It's like this weird, like, you know, this the Mike character, he's like, he has like this weird like personality. So it's like he's sort of like here and he's not here. It's just very strange, but and it also has this like this air of like paranoia to it, like cocaine induced paranoia, because that's like part of the story with the drug dealing and stuff. So it's like this weird, it just has like a weird tone to it, and it just really like struck me when I watched it. So that was like what I found about this movie, because I had heard about it like for like months and months, and I was like, I gotta check that out. Sort of like a neo-noir type movie, you know what I mean, like of LA and set in LA. And it does have a score by Joe Jackson. I don't know if you've heard, that's like kind of playing in the background. And that was like another little detail that I liked, because I like his music. So like some of his songs were like playing in there, and it was really good. I just thought it was a neat little film. Just like a little overlooked gem, like, you know.
Sounds good.
Yeah. If you like neo-noir, it's like those like LA neo-noir type movies. Like you might like that one. That's it.
Okay, so my number four here is the Robert Mitchum movie Yakuza.
That's an awesome film.
And yeah, that's a, you know, and that's a really impressive. I think it's Sidney Pollack, the director.
Yes, Sidney Pollack with a Paul Schrader script.
Yeah, and it's about this guy, like an older like detective / veteran, and he goes to Japan on a contract to, you know, figure something out with an old friend that he owes a favor, and then he gets into this whole conspiracy with like big corporate honchos and the Yakuza and like honor and cover-up stories, and he's kind of the quiet detective like, but he gets deeper and deeper into this kind of rabbit hole that is the case that he's working on.
Right.
And what's amazing about the movie, I thought, is that it's just there's a lot of love for detail, and in the end, it just gets really wild.
It's almost like does like the Paul Schrader ending, like with like Rolling Thunder and Taxi Driver, like that type of like heroic bloodshed type stuff. That's an awesome film. And also, isn't it like his he was like a vet, like a, was he in Korea or World War II? Like, so he has like his like ex like girlfriend there and stuff, like there's like ex Japanese.
Exactly. Yeah. For him, it's in many ways, it's a trip down memory lane. Yeah,
it's like he's going back to.
It's like old ghosts that he wakes up also, and he has to he's going there initially like reluctantly, but also like there's something that draws him back to that part of his history, you know?
Right.
And so that makes the movie also like, you know, it makes it really personal in a way that it's not just a contract job that he's on, but it's also like it's part of
his life that he's left behind,
like, part of his life that he needs to dig up. And you know, there's always this question of whether he might he might actually have a role in this,
right?
Or maybe there's something in the past that he misremembers, or that you know, he glanced over and he didn't realize what that was going on. And maybe he overestimated the role he played as an outsider in that society, because he considered himself to be almost like from there, speaking the language and so on.
Same like code of honor and stuff. Like he has.
He's not a complete outsider from his perspective. But then he realizes that you can speak the language, you can be with a Japanese woman, and you can live there, but you're still not going to be part of that society and code of honor. And
you'll always be like an outsider in a way. But
so that was pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good film. Really good film. I second that one, that pick. That was really good.
That's out on.
I just didn't remember the whole plot of it.
You can get that on a Blu-ray, and that's
pretty good. Excellent. Watch it
on YouTube or something.
Yep. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't know if Mike's Murder. I didn't mention of Mike's Murders. I think it's on DVD. I think. I'm not sure. But yeah, it is on DVD. It's on DVD. But it's like, who's watching DVDs now? Everybody's watching Blu-rays. We have to put it on Blu-ray. Yeah. Okay, I'll do my number four pick. Okay, my number four pick is called Brother John, and it's from 1971, and it was directed by James Goldstone. And this is considered one of Sidney Poitier's best like roles from the actors that have like watched it that I've heard of, because I first heard about this movie like on TCM. I was watching a little featurette on Sidney Poitier, and the actors that were interviewed like kept bringing this film up, saying like how good it was, like how good his performance was. So I wanted to see it, and I finally was able to check out a copy, and it wasn't like a great copy of it, but I didn't care about that. I just wanted to see the movie. But so Sidney Poitier in the film, he plays a guy named John Kane, and like he's sort of, what happens is it's like every time someone in his family dies, he'll like show up, and like and it's like a weird thing like that happens, like a pattern that happens, and they don't really know, and like no one really knows who this guy is. So there's like also like a strike going on in the town, so like the police and like the authorities think he's like an agitator or something. They don't know like what his agenda is. So like he's and it's like throughout the film, you don't really know what he's doing there. Like, he's like part of the family because his sister dies. So he shows up and like, to go to her funeral and stuff. But after that, you don't know like what his deal is. So it's like if you've seen the movie High Plains Drifter with, Clint Eastwood, how he kind of just like rides out of nowhere. And he's like, he shows up and he's like back in this town, and like, he's like kind of stirring up trouble, and everybody's like, who is this guy? Like, it's that type of thing. But it's not like, this movie doesn't have as much violence as that. But it's the same type of tone. It's just a very mysterious type guy. And like, and like one of the best scenes in the movie, like, the sheriff of the town, like, tries to fight John Kane. Like he just kicks his ass completely. And it's just like, who is this guy? Is he like an avenging angel? Is he a secret agent? Is he like a superhero? Like, what is the deal? They don't like ever tell you anything about him. The only like details that they give you is like, he has like a passport he's like been to everywhere, all over the world and stuff. and he has like a few books on him, and that's like, that's it. There's no details of like what he actually does, where he came from. So that's like the whole thing throughout the movie. You're wondering who this guy is. And that's just like a really good, like, you know, thriller like that. And it's one of the, I think it's one of his best performances, although it's like, you don't, there's not a lot to go on because it's not, there's no like concrete idea of like what he is. So it's just a weird, mysterious film. So that's why I liked it. So it mm-hmm. just reminded me of High Plains Drifter mostly. That's probably the connection there. That's why I found it kind of intriguing. So
I might like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a little gem like, and it's not particularly like awesome, you know, direction or anything. It's just sort of like a basic, you know, it's fine. It's perfectly fine, but it's not like, it's more of like about him, his performance and that character. That's what you're like kind of like wondering about through the whole film. But since Sidney Poitier just passed away, I picked out some other movies of his that I really like that I just wanted to list, like, you know, in case anybody hasn't seen them or they want to know like what other films of his I like. And I picked Edge of the City, The Defiant Ones, In the Heat of the Night, A Raisin in the Sun, and Buck and the Preacher. Those are like some other Sidney Poitier favorites of mine. So
yeah, I just wanted to throw them in there. Really great. I like that one.
Yeah, I wanted to throw them in there just, you know, as a little tribute to him. He was like an amazing actor, and
he was a legend.
Yeah, a legend. So, yeah, that's my mm-hmm. number four, Brother John. It's called.
Cool, goes on my list like the other ones. Okay, so what my number three is a Italian/European war, or let's say men on a mission war movie called Commandos. And I know there's different versions out there, so I have to say one of the reasons I think that it blew me away so much is because it was the long uncut one version, and it was also in HD for some reason, so it was on European Netflix. And I was just amazed at, you know, out of all the little European war movies out of the 60s and 70s, this one struck me as extremely ambitious, high quality. There was tons of stuff going on.
Is that Lee Van Cleef in that one?
Lee Van Cleef is in there, and a bunch of other actors. And you're like, I was just scrolling through my Netflix, and I noticed that it was on there. And I'm like, wow, okay, need to watch that one with, I would say low expectations.
Yeah.
But it was just such an elaborate, also like gloomy and atmospheric and extremely brutal, but, you know, very like, a well-written mission movie about a commando unit that occupies I think it's a well or, yeah. or
is it like North Africa or something?
Yeah, it's like takes place in a desert, and they take over a well, and then they pose as I think a German battalion, but then there's like real Germans coming, and then they have to like uphold the masquerade for a while,
yeah.
all the trickiness. And in the end, it's just, you know, there's of course lots of fighting that breaks out, and you have to see it to believe it, because this one is definitely not low budget. It probably had like a fairly decent budget, and it's extremely overlooked. Like, I don't see it popping up on a lot of lists or anything.
Isn't it like, but it's like a macaroni combat film, isn't it? Kind of. Like,
I would call it macaroni combat. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like
so for those out there, if you come across that at the longer one,
because I saw it a few years ago. I saw it like a couple years ago, and I thought it was really good too. It was excellent. Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah. So that's it. That was a, like, as you said earlier, it kind of stinks when you finally get to watch a movie and it sucks.
Yeah, it does.
But, and I like the discoveries that are so positive, where, you know, you had low expectations going in, and then you're like, wow, this makes my top five instantly.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. I know what you're saying. That's, I agree with that totally. And I had sort of the next movie on my list is sort of like that. It's like that type of thing, like where I was like, should I do my number three now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, my number three film is Newman's Law, and that was actually released the day after I was born in 1974. I was looking at the release date, and I was like, oh, that's right on the, so funny little thing. And this stars George Peppard. And I'm not really a George Peppard fan so much. I don't like, you know, I've seen a few movies with him, and, you know, he's okay and everything. But
one of the Georges.
Yeah, one of the Georges, George Chakiris and George Maharis. were the other ones, as we know now. And yeah. but he plays a guy named Vince Newman. He's like a cop. And it's like one of those films where like it's sort of like Serpico-ish, like that type of like story, like where like the other guys, you know, the people on the force are like involved in a drug ring, and he's like trying to like, you know, find out who's behind it all. So that's basically the plot of the film. But it was just a really solid like crime thriller. Like I was expecting it just to like, you know, just to watch it and be like a total like dud. Like, you know, like I just, because I've seen like so many movies with him where like I just was just so dull and boring. But this one was really like, it was just really like, you know, well paced, and like it just, it was like a real crackerjack type crime film. And I love like when movies like deliver like that. And his partner in the movie is played by Roger Robinson. And no, this is like a little detail that I found funny, like or cool. But he's actually the main pimp in Willie Dynamite, that movie that I love, the blaxploitation film. So it's like, you know, it's just like a little detail like that. I was like, oh, that's the guy from Willie Dynamite. And he's like, and this is like he's playing his partner. So it's like he's not like a crazy pimp. He's just like a normal, like, you know, blue collar guy. So it was like I thought that was kind of cool. So. Yeah. But that was like a little detail that I liked. But the movie itself is like, it's almost like a little Serpico, a little Walking Tall. And like, you know, and George Pardt is really good in it. And I'm not, like I was saying, I'm not like a huge fan of him. And it's 100 times better than that boring piece of crap Pendulum that we watched. Remember that movie Pendulum that was like on the, it was in that movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood on the marquee. Yeah. I was like, oh, what the hell?
I don't think I've seen it.
Yeah. Okay. I thought you saw that, but I watched it because I was like, oh yeah, that must be like a really good movie because it's on the marquee and in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It was such a dud. It was like the biggest dud ever. It was like the worst, like worst cop movie I've ever seen. But this one is like way better than that, in my opinion.
The way you describe Newman's Law, it reminds me a little bit of that Robert Duvall movie Batch 373.
Yeah, you didn't like that one though, did you? I thought you said you didn't like it.
I thought it was fine, but yeah. You know, it has a lot of problems.
But I mean, this one I think I like better than that. This one, it's like it doesn't have that like thing where it's like very like it's just like bland. It's like it's like a very good like action thriller, and there's always like some twists going on, and like, you know, there's like always, the action is always moving, and like you're invested in the characters right up to the end. That's like what I liked. It's a lot of movies, like they'll start out good and then they'll kind of like just wane at like as at, from the middle to the end. This one like kind of like kept up the whole thing right to the end, like which is what I'm looking for when I watch movies. I don't want to like just have like, you know, 15 minutes of awesomeness and then the rest is like crap. I want to see like, you know, the whole thing like just go right to the very end. So I just was impressed by that, this film. And you know, I think along with The Ground Star Conspiracy, this is my other favorite George Pappard film. Because I mean, I'm not like a huge fan of him, but those two movies now are probably my favorites with him. Because I grew up watching him on the A-Team, and you know, that's pretty much all I knew him from. Yeah, I didn't really know him from this.
To me, he's always like Hannibal.
Yeah, that was my George Pappard show. Like I didn't know him from any of the films. I was too young. I didn't know any of those older movies he did. So that was like how I knew him. So out of watching his film, you know, several films from his career, those are the two that I like the most now, Newman's Law and Ground Star Conspiracy. And that's on Blu-ray now from Kino Lorber too. Newman's Law, it was pretty good. I mean, it was like, you know, good little crime action movie.
I like those. I like the cool 70s, early 70s.
Yeah, and I'm a big 70s like crime movie fan anyways, as you know. So it's like, you know, I'm always looking for like those little gems that are like, you know, I've missed. And I'd consider that a little gem. For me anyways, yeah. I mean, you know, that's my taste. Other, someone else might watch it and be like, oh, this is dull, but I thought it was pretty good. So,
right. Yep. Okay. So my number two on this list is part of my, I want to say long running quest to see more classic Westerns. As you know, I'm a spaghetti Western buff. So I watch a lot of European Westerns. So I have plenty of gaps in my classic Western, like US Western knowledge. And so one movie I finally saw, and you know, to my shame, it took me some decades.
30 years, 35 years.
So
in the making.
It's called 310 to Yuma.
Oh yeah, that's an awesome classic.
The original black and white.
Yeah, that's a real classic. Say,
it really blew me away. I mean, of course. So for a number of reasons. One reason is that it looks really great. I mean, it's not like one of those generic looking ones.
Is it Delmer Daves?
I think so. Got like it's got great cinematography, it's got great black and white images.
Yeah, it is a great looking movie.
I think for the time it came out, it could have easily been already a color production.
Yeah.
But I think it was a deliberate choice to match, and this is the second reason why I really
the story
and the characters especially are so strong. Like the heavy is such an interesting character where he's a bad guy. He knows he's a bad guy, but he's
likable though.
He's likable and also he's smart in his own way, but also like he knows what his place is. He doesn't try to break out of his like role that he plays in society.
And that was a good character.
That's Glenn Ford.
Glenn Ford.
And then Van Heflin plays the quote unquote hero, but also he's an interesting guy because he's absolutely in this involuntary more or less. But then, as we go through the movie, you learn a little bit more about the motivations. And it's such an interesting character study where Van Heflin's character, he does a lot of things because he considers things like, what are my kids thinking of me? What's my wife expecting of me? There's a lot of like kind of a American style introspection going on there in terms of on that level of what the hero is like, or what's and especially also like what's expected of a male person in that time and in this society. And it's just fantastic, these two. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, Glenn Ford's character is really good because he's sort of like he's a likable like bad guy, which is always like the best kind of bad guy for me. You know what I mean? Yeah, he's like sort of like trying to get Van Heflin to like go like almost like break the law or something, or you know what I mean, like to or like give up what he's doing, or like he's trying to like, you know.
Yeah, and he's not he's not a brute or whatever.
Yeah.
He's violent and he's
it's almost like Glenn Ford's character is like the type of guy that's like he's seen both sides and he's like, you know what, I think I'm gonna go with the bad side. You know what I mean? Like he's almost like a guy that seems like he could be a good guy, but he's like lost his like, you know, his interest in doing that or type thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's absolutely a fantastic movie, I have to say. Yeah. And
film.
There's a remake. The remake's fine, but this is really an outstanding classic Western. Outstanding.
Yeah. You got to see the original first and then, you know, see the, you know, definitely this is an awesome film. Okay. So I'll do my number two. And this is kind of a funny pick because it's not like, you know, it's not like some, you know, crazy, you know, tough, violent movie or anything, but it's called Kenny and Company, and it's from 1976. And this movie out of all of them surprised me because like I went in, I was like, oh, this is going to be, you know, I just want to check it out, see what this movie's about, because it's directed by Don Coscarelli, the guy that did Phantasm, you know, that movie that I like, the horror movie. Mm-hmm. And it just surprised me because I was like, oh, this is going to be like a, you know, it's like Kenny and Company. It's about this like kid and like, you know, just a bunch of goofy kids. But like I started watching it. And it's like maybe one of the funniest movies I've seen in like years. It's just hilarious. Like I was just laughing through the whole film and it was just like really enjoyable. And, you know, it's basically about this kid growing up in Southern California in like, you know, the 70s. And he's like hanging out with his friends and, you know, he's getting, you know, bullied by people and, you know, he's like meeting girls that he likes. And it's just basically like a lot of silliness and wacky scenarios. And like, you know, he's just, you know, and all the characters are kind of like funny and weird. And like, you know, just, it's just like almost like a screwball comedy for kids. And it's also like a little like coming of age tale. And also like, it just shows you like what it's like when you're young, like the stuff you like to do, like skateboarding. And like, it's just a really like fun film and really funny and quirky. And it has like this good this cool score by Fred Myro. I think he did Phantasm too, but this one is like, you know, like a really like, I don't know how you'd describe it. It's just like this really cool mellow gold score about like, you know, set in the 70s, like with a 70s theme and like, you know, a little bit of rock and roll, a little bit of like, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but I just really love this film. It just like took me by surprise type thing. Like I wasn't like expecting anything from it, but I just had the best time. It was just such a feel good film. I really would like recommend to anybody, if you're like feeling like crap or something and you just want to like laugh and like, you know, just, you know, revisit like a different era. It's just one of those movies. I'd put it on and just watch it. It's like awesome. I really loved it. Yeah. And also, you know, check out. And also two of the actors from Phantasm are in this movie. Reggie Bannister plays a teacher in this one. He plays Reggie, the ice cream man in Phantasm. And then Michael Baldwin, who plays like one of the brothers in Phantasm, is Kenny's best friend. So like, you know, they're in both movies. So there's like a little connection there, but you know, it's just, it's like its own film. It's not, if you've seen Phantasm, it's like, you know, that's like, this is like the complete opposite of that. It's like, just like comedy and like funny characters and like little, you know, they're always getting into trouble and stuff. It's just really fun. A cool little movie. It's almost like, you know, Charlie Brown, like in real life type thing. It's like really cool. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's on DVD too. It's not on Blu-ray yet, but it should be though.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really good.
Never heard. Is the Phantasm is there's a sequel to it, right?
Yeah, Phantasm 2.
Okay.
You know, I think there's Phantasm 3 or whatever.
I just want to make sure I'm thinking of the right one.
Yeah, the original Phantasm is one of my favorites though. I love that film. I watch it every year usually. But yeah, this is another little gem, which I had never seen before. I had heard about it. Like, you know, I think I'd seen like the name pop up here and there, but then someone mentioned that it was like, I think I heard it on the podcast or something. And I just thought I'd check it out. And I really loved it. It was just really good. So that's my number two.
Okay. So then my number one pick is also part of a long running effort. And this is me getting back into watching 80s, 90s Hong Kong movies.
Oh, yeah.
And the title is Wild Search. And it's a movie starring Chow Yun-fat and directed by Ringo Lam.
Cool.
And the fantastic little police movie with a very strong personal and emotional note. It's got its like little Hong Kong blood opera moments and shootouts, but it's mostly a more quiet movie. There's a little romance and love story in there. There's like a little kid in there. There's a little buddy cop aspect. And you know, it's been called by some folks, including on the new Blu-ray by Eureka, it's been called the Chow Yun-fat's best performance. And I have not seen enough Chow Yun-fat movies to make that kind of judgment, but it is really, really good.
That's awesome. Like, and
it's really one of those awesome discoveries where you know all the Chun Woo movies, and you might have seen a few other like more well-known flicks that came out of that time, and this one's kind of been under the radar for a lot of people, but now that it's an autumn Blu-ray, Wild Search is really, really highly recommended. I had a lot of fun watching that, and as I mentioned, this is out from Eureka on Blu-ray with
what year was this one again?
1989 or
so I wonder if it was like right around the time of like, or it was before Hard Boiled, I guess it was like, you know, probably a couple of years before.
It might have been before.
It was like around the time of The Killer, maybe. I don't know what year did that come out. 1980 1990.
I need to check and place them, because also there's the question of when were they made and when did they come out. That might not been the same sequence of events, but this one is definitely like more of a something that deserves like a critical appraisal rather than a popular.
Right.
You know, it's not an action movie. It's more like a buddy cop drama with a love story in there and some.
It's
still violent and all those things, but it's got a little mellowness to it, and nice atmosphere, and I think the neon lights and all the smoking and all that stuff from the from the late 80s in Hong Kong, and
that style, same like style.
That's really fantastic, and Eureka, that UK label is really good, because they're actually on a roll releasing a whole bunch of Hong Kong movies. They also released Johnny Toes, PT.
Aren't they releasing a, they're releasing a bunch of Jackie Chan movies too, I think?
Jackie Chan movies, yeah. Some older Kung Fu movies. Yeah. They're also releasing some newer ones. And I hope that they keep up this, you know, unearthing the 80s, 90s ones, because as most, you know, Hong Kong movie fans will know, that a lot of the materials were lost in a fire. They're treated really badly. They're being redubbed. All the music's been stripped out for the US release. So the movies from that era have been treated really badly. So I'm always happy if there's a label that that manages to get a hold of material that presents these movies in an authentic fashion.
Yeah, uncut and everything.
You can actually rediscover it outside of that old like VHS garbage pile kind of quality.
Right. Yeah, no, of course. I mean, and what was the name of it? Wild Search?
Wild Search.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. I'd like to check that one out too. Mm. That sounds good.
But yeah, that was definitely a highlight.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. What's your number one?
Okay. My number one film is a film. It's like a movie that, you know, a lot of people, a lot of critics probably know, a lot of like film fans know, but I just hadn't seen it before. So, and I had heard about how good it was and I wanted to check it out. And it's called Silent Running and it's from 1972 and it's directed by Douglas Trumbull. And he created the effects on
Bruce Dern, right?
Yep. Bruce Dern stars in it. And Trumbull created the effects for 2001, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Star Trek and Blade Runner. Those are like, you know, some awesome films. But his film is it's set in the future where all plant life on Earth is becoming extinct. So basically what they're doing is they're putting plants and trees and, you know, all these things on inside of domes and like greenhouse domes. And then they attach them to spaceships and they put them out like in space so they can grow there. And Bruce Dern is like plays a guy named Freeman Lowell, and he's the botanist and ecologist who is taking care of all these different plants and stuff. So like, you know, basically they're keeping them going, and then they're going to try to reforest the planet. Like, you know, once everything starts growing back. Well, so what happens is he's, you know, he's putting like all his energy and all his focus into like, you know, getting these, you know, the plants and crops back to life again, and animals too, like are on the ship. And what happens is the corporation that they're working for, they decide to like end this project. So Freeman Lowell is like in like a, you know, he's kind of like, he's one of these guys where he's like so obsessed and, you know, about what he's doing. And he takes it so seriously that something happens, you know, everything goes wrong for him. So like he takes things into his own hands and he like goes to like extreme measures to keep everything going. I'm trying not to spoil the film. And he like he has some little robots that he reprograms, Huey and Dewey, and they help him like keep the reforestation project going. So he's basically, you know, up there alone in this spaceship, and he's like trying to like keep it going, and you know that's like his like he's like trying to get along with these you know the little robots and like, and it's like that type of story. And you've seen like these types of stories before, like Moon or Gravity, like where people are kind of stranded alone up in space and like, you know, they're like going through like their issue up there. But I just really like, you know, I kind of related to the character, and I just really like Bruce Dern. I think it's one of his best performances in a movie, really. It was awesome.
I mean, fantastic movie. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like really a good film. I mean, it's like, it's tough to like put all the stuff that you love into like just one description and have it like, you know what I mean? It's like, there's so many things you're thinking of while you're watching it. It just was really like taken with like this story and like, you know, his, you know, the plot stuff is like, okay, but it's like, it's not like what your emotional connection to the film. And that's, I had like an emotional connection to the film so much. So that's really why I liked it the most. So, but it's also on Blu-ray from Arrow Video, which is like a good, that's a good label. And that's a good, you know, if you're going to get a Blu-ray of it, that'd be perfect for that. So, but yeah, I really like that one. I had heard about it for years and like, I just had missed it. And I was like, and I was also kind of getting sick of like space movies. I was like, I don't really feel like watching another like space person in space movie. I was just like, you know, I'm kind of sick of that subgenre of film. But then I watched it and I gave it a chance and I just really liked it. And his performance is like a big part of why I liked it too. You know, it's not like, you know, because he's sort of like by himself pretty much in the movie. So, and you're seeing like, I've known him from other movies too. Like you've seen Bruce Dern, like he always plays like he'll play like a lot of crazy characters and like kind of like extreme characters. But this one was like a lot more like, it was almost like with Nicolas Cage and Pig, like he's more like, it's like more of an internal performance. Like you're like watching him, like he cares about things and like other people don't. And I think that's what it was that I like responded to in that, like, you know, he was like focused on things that other people like just didn't care about. And he wanted to like try to save something and make it like, you know, make it keep going. And other people just didn't give a crap. And he was totally like trying to save it and make it like, you know, continue. And I totally understood that part of the character. So, So that was why I liked it pretty much. So yeah, that was my number one
really
pick.
Good. He's really good at this.
Yeah. Yep. So.
Yeah. So that was number one. I do have.
That's a good list of both.
Yeah, it's a fantastic list. And I think this list could also help a lot of, you know, listeners dive deeper into some of the things you mentioned. I do have a few follow-ups that I wanted to mention just to give you an idea of what were some of the other titles that I was considering to be highlights. Just to throw them out there. And that's Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah, that's definitely an awesome film.
Paul Newman. Then I know you had this on an earlier version, Ice Cold and Alex.
Oh yeah, that was almost on my list. Yeah, I almost put that on my list too.
That's a fantastic little discovery.
Yeah, that's an excellent film.
And then I rewatched The Professionals, and I noticed what an awesome Western that is.
Yeah, that's a good film.
I paired it in a double feature with 100 Rifles.
Oh yeah, that was it. I don't know if that one wasn't one of my favorites, but it was okay. I liked it.
It's got cinema's best shower sequence in there.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's Raquel Welch, Burt Reynolds, and Jim Brown.
I mean,
it's a great. It's one of those movies like where the three lead characters, you're like, oh, this is going to be awesome. But then I was like watching, I was like, this isn't that great, even with these guys. And they're like some of my favorite actors. I don't know why. It was just kind of like
It's not an A movie.
Yeah, it's just sort of like bleh. I don't know. It's just sort of like duds.
Yeah, but it's a lot of fun. And then we had this on a different episode. We talked about Walter Hill. So Geronimo definitely resonated with me rewatching it.
Geronimo.
And then I had a movie that's super unknown. It's I think it's from the Philippines or so. It's called Marlena. It's kind of like or Indonesian. I don't know. It's kind of like a little take on a rape and revenge movie.
Oh, okay. What year is that from?
I think that's from last year even.
Oh, so it's like a new film.
I'll put it in the show notes because it's really interesting. And then one movie I really liked also is Motherless Brooklyn.
Oh yeah, I saw that. That was Edward Norton's film. Yeah, that was pretty good.
One of his best performances in recent years.
And it's funny like how he'll always play like, did you ever see The Score with Robert De Niro? Mm-hmm. And that was that's one of my favorite movies of his. And it's funny like how he'll always play like mentally like challenge, like, you know, like he plays like guys with like some mental handicap, and he's like, I don't know, it's sort of like Rain Man or something in Motherless Brooklyn. He's like, he's really smart, but he has like some weird.
He has Tourette. Yeah.
Was it Tourette's or something? I forget what it was.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And so the one other movie that I finally watched last year was The Endless Summer.
Oh yeah, that's a fun movie. That's a good summer movie, like to watch.
Like great summer movie. Right. And then one movie I can really recommend also if you like the film noir that's not from the olden days.
Yeah.
It's a movie called City of Tiny Lights, and I put this on there also because I think Riz Ahmed. Anything you put him in is great.
Yeah, the Rizzer. That's what we call it.
The Resurrector. Yeah, so those were some other movies that I had on my short list.
And also, we were also talking about Sound of Metal. Now, wasn't that like, that could have been on this list, right, or something? Because I remember I was looking at something.
Yeah, it could
have been. Because that would have been probably like my number two pick or something if I had put it on this list of the new movies. Because I love that film. That was awesome. That was definitely one of my favorite films of the last couple of years. Mm, I love that one. That was that really delivered. And the Rizzer was great in it.
The Rizzer. Yeah. And we talked about this a little earlier before we started. So there's also some disappointments. And I made a note of one disappointment just as an example. I know you have a few more.
Out of new
one movie, one out of old movies, especially. Okay. Like I had one set of movies I had on my list for a long time.
Yep.
Last year, I finally watched them, and those are the Once Upon a Time in China movies.
Oh yeah, you were saying that. Yeah, yeah.
And I have to say, what a bunch of crap. I mean, come on.
What a bunch of.
So goofy and so full of like cliches and racism. Yeah.
You don't like those goofy Chinese
people. I don't mind the martial arts and I know that they came before
kind of the
Shanghai Noon movies.
What a bunch of sukiyaki.
But really, like, I mean,
what a bunch of chow mein, lousy chow mein.
Yeah, I really didn't care for them at all. So those were like a huge bummer. I bought like the box set. I watched it. I immediately put them on eBay or something. And like, no, this is not going to stay in my shelf.
Yeah. Just as
an example of something that I was really looking forward to and to finally cross off my list, you know?
Yep.
And oh my God.
So that was just a disappointment, those ones.
Yeah.
How many is there? Like four or five or something?
I think there's six in total, okay. But not all of them are with Jet Li. So I only watched Jet Li, the first three, and then there's like a four and five that's without him. And then the sixth one's Once Upon a Time in China and America.
Yeah.
And I mean,
it just wasn't good.
They have like some things that are okay and they're entertaining, but unless you really like this kind of movies, skip them.
I probably wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't probably waste my time with the, you know, certain stuff. I mean, you know, it just depends. I mean, you have to be really like into those movies to watch like six of them too. Jeez.
Yeah.
So, that's a lot of stuff. Maybe one or two or something.
That was kind of the bummers. I mean, obviously we're going to, you know, put all this stuff on the show notes for those listening where you can find these movies and so on.
You'll be like, stay away from Once Upon a Time in China.
Stay away from this one.
Stay away from this one. Everything else you can
watch. If you do want to get them, use our Amazon links.
If you do want to spend $150 on this piece of crap stuff.
So we want to round this off with a bunch of home video recommendations, and I'll let you go first and share some of your tips, and then I'm gonna go through like I have like five or six that I would recommend, and then just to give our listeners some idea of what were some of the releases that we thought were really amazing, and also what were the kind of home video products that we thought are really worth the money to.
But I also like when it comes to like Blu-rays, like I'm not like, I know a lot of people, I know people love extras and stuff, but like, it's like one of those, like my theory on that is it's like, why am I buying like a movie that I don't love just for extras? You know what I mean? That doesn't really, you know, like I'm thinking of the movies first. Like, so I'm like, I'm trying to pick the movies that I love. So even if there isn't any extras on it, I still will watch the movie. It's, you know what I mean? That's what I'm going for. I'm not going for like a so-so movie with like three discs of extras. That makes no sense. So it's like, the way I pick these movies are the movies come first. If I love the movies, there might be like a theatrical trailer and that's it on the Blu-ray, but it's like the movie's good. So it's like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it, but I'll start with my number five pick.
No, do all of them. And then okay.
Well, all right. So, I'll just give the, I won't do like from five down, I'll just do all of them. So my number one pick, I guess on this pick is worth like explaining like what the extras are. The other ones are like this, a few good extras on these other ones, but I'll tell you what's on this first one, because it's such a pretty like, you know, essential movie to have in your collection pretty much as far as I'm concerned. But it's Citizen Kane. It's the new Criterion release of Citizen Kane, and it's 4K. And I think it's also Blu-ray too. So if you got it, you could watch either one. But it's just, the title itself is pretty much essential to have. And it's a four disc edition, and it has like, you know, Dolby Vision HDR, and there's three audio commentaries on it. There's Orson Welles scholars James Naremore and Jason Rosenbaum. And then there's Peter Bogdanovich, and then Roger Ebert's audio commentary. And those are like, you know, it's just, you got to have this in your collection anyways. So you might as well splurge and just get this. And then there's also the complete Citizen Kane documentary by BBC. There's new interviews with critics, Farron Smith Name and film scholar Raquel Gates. And then there's a video essay by Orson Welles scholar Robert Carringer. And then there's a program on the film special effects, interviews with the editor Robert Wise and actors from the film, and you know, several different filmmakers like, you know, Martin Scorsese and you know, Peter Bogdanovich. And there's a new documentary with interviews with Orson Welles. There's interviews with Joseph Cotten. He's the co-star of the film. And there's like several more like really good extras in there. But that's my number one pick. I think that's like an essential movie to have in your collection if you're a film, you know, a film buff. It's just, you know, the movie itself, and it's such a huge part of film history. So it's good to have that, a copy of that in your collection. That's my pick, Citizen Kane. And also probably a little tribute to Peter Bogdanovich. If you don't want to listen to me, listen to Peter Bogdanovich, who just passed away. That he would, I'm sure he would want this in your collection too. That's okay. My next pick is Breakdown, and that's one of my favorite road thrillers. It's from 1997 by Jonathan Mostow.
And, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's a, like a really good. I was trying to like go through and like, you know, I wanted to pick a little bit of, I wanted to make a little bit of like, you know, cinema, you know, cinema education, and a little bit of like, you know, just fun movies that you'd want to rewatch every once in a while. So that was my second pick, and that has some good, like, you know, good extras on it. Like, you know, I think it has a audio commentary with Kurt Russell and the director, and that's like, you know, they're fun to listen to. So that'll be a good one. And there's a whole bunch of like little like extra, you know, little featurettes on, you know, the with the actors and stuff that you'll like. And that's that one. That's from Paramount. That's on Blu-ray. And then Runaway Train is my next pick. That's from 1985. That's one of my most favorite action thrillers.
It's cool. And,
it's like, you know, it's John Voight, you know, everyone's favorite, you know, actor John Voight and Eric Roberts. They play like two escaped convicts who escaped from a Alaska prison, and they're trying to get away, but they get a ride on a train, and ends up the train is like unmanned. So it's like they're like stuck on this train trying to like get off as the thing is like careening through like the Alaskan countryside in the frigid cold, and they're stuck on it together. And it's like this whole awesome, you know, it's almost like a, you know, this opera of like, you know, acting with these two great actors. They're just amazing, like in this movie. It's probably one of my most favorite John Voight and Eric Roberts performances in this film. But it's just such a great thriller, and it has like a it does have an audio commentary with Eric Roberts and some critics on there. It's like a, let's see, I think that's all that, you know, that's like the main commentary for the film. But it's just, that's one of my most favorite movies. I've like, you know, for years I've loved that film. But just a great movie. And the next one on my list is Straight Time from 1978. And that was directed by Ulu Grossbard. And that's one of my most favorite crime films of all time. And Dustin Hoffman stars as a career criminal named Max Dembo, who just gets out of prison, and he's trying to get back, like, you know, he's trying to go straight, but things keep going wrong. And like this, he has this terrible parole officer played by Emmett Walsh, who just like screws him over big time. And Max basically snaps and just goes back to being a criminal again. So it's like, it follows his adventures, like, you know, like as he's trying to like, you know, not get caught and stuff. And it's just one of the best, I think it's one of the best, like, you know, like character studies of like criminals, like of like what they go through. It's almost like a thing where he's like obsessed with like getting caught and getting thrown back in prison or something, more than like succeeding at what he's doing. It's weird. It's like a weird, it reminded me of the movie The Gambler with James Caan. It's sort of the same, like a similar version of that, where he's not trying to win. He's addicted to losing. It's like sort of the same thing with Max Dembo. He's basically, his whole life, he's been he's been caught, thrown in prison, caught, thrown in prison. So it's like he has like this weird pattern where he's trying to break it. But so you feel for the guy on one hand, and then you're like kind of like getting thrills from him, like doing these robberies and stuff. It's just really a good, great character study, you know, crime film. And I love that one. And that was based on a book by Eddie Bunker, Mr. Blue from Reservoir Dogs, who basically he knew like what the real life was of criminals. So it's like you're getting the real authentic thing from the guys that lived it. So that was like one of my favorite films. And then my final pick is Lady in a Cage from 1964. And that was directed by Walter Grauman. And that's a movie about this middle-aged woman played by Olivia de Havilland. And she has like some handicap. I think her leg is like broken or something like that. But she has this like built-in elevator in her house. And one day, it's like during the summertime, she's going up to the second floor in this elevator and the power goes out and she gets stuck like halfway up. But then somehow there's these group of punks and one of them is a young James Caan. This is one of his earliest roles. And they find out that she's alone in the house and they break in and that's the end of that story. All hell breaks loose. And it's like this like pot boiler scenario where they're like, you know, they're taunting her and she's like yelling at them and going nuts in the elevator. It's just really a really fun film. So that's like my fifth pick. And that has like a audio commentary on the Blu-ray with film historian David Del Valle and filmmaker David DeCoto and some other stuff. But that's one of my most favorite movies too. It's like a little like cult gem, like,
but okay, never heard of it.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. So those are my picks. I hope I didn't talk too fast and like run through it.
And then,
honorable
mention, you did get
Shaw
Brothers box set. Right?
Yeah, the Shaw Scope Volume 1 box set is like, you know, I have to mention that one because it's like an awesome, if you're into martial arts, classic martial arts films, that's like really a must own. I don't think I'll be able to get the second volume, but I mean, you know, I'm not going to go that nuts with it, but this first one is like really like a really great, it has like all these really early Shaw Brothers martial arts classics, like from Five Fingers of Death to, Five Deadly Venoms. And like, I think there's like 8 or 9 films on in the package. So, you know, if you're an old school martial arts fan, that's definitely one I'd recommend to you. All like, you know, HD, Blu-ray, and it's really nice. So, and you know, this audio comment, lots of like extras, like with interviews with actors and some audio commentaries and lots of good stuff on there. So
yeah, I saw you got that one. So that's really exciting. I mean, Arrow has done some fantastic stuff. And
they always do good stuff.
Some of my picks are Arrow Video too. Yep. So let's see what I got. So I would say that those that I'm mentioning here, I would say they're like blind purchases. So I would say like if you have
blind
a chance,
buys, okay.
Blind buys, like they can't go wrong with them.
Yeah.
So the one is the True Romance UK released and 4K, and it might be a little bit hard to get because it just sells really fast and it's just out in the UK.
How many discs are in that anyways?
I think it might just be two. The biggest selling point, aside from the fact that they did a 4K restoration, is that it has both of the versions of the movie, the theatrical one
and the director's cut.
The preferred director's cut.
Yeah, it's like unrated or something. Yeah.
I think it carries over all the older extras that had been on the Warner releases or whatever. So you can't do wrong with it. And I would say eventually someone will release it in the US as well, but you know, not Arrow because they don't have the rights. But that's pretty cool that you can finally get that movie and with that kind of option of also seeing what people saw back then when they went to the movies.
Right.
Even though, you know, director, writer, fans, everyone prefers the director's cut, but you know, some people might want to have a look at the original studio version, basically, of the movie. And then another pick I have for those who like kind of 60s, 70s European crime movies, and this is a French movie called The Burglars. I think it's called Le Cas or something. It's with Jean-Paul Belmondo.
Yeah.
And there's a German Blu-ray out that has both the international and the French version of the movie. And it's kind of a long, long, elaborate heist movie, chase movie with, you know, crazy car chases and stuff like that. So if you like that, it's beautifully shot, made in France, stellar cast. That's kind of, you know, it's not up there with the greatest Blu-ray releases, but as you said, it's, you know, the movie's great, and if, you know, and the Blu-ray is great too. So that's kind of an interesting pick for those who like European crime.
I also feel like, you know, like, what if the movie is like totally, what if you watch the movie on Blu-ray and that you love the movie, but it's like there's only a theatrical trailer extra? It's like, what do you, it's like, who cares? You know what I mean? Like, I don't even care. I mean, it's, it would be nice to have a commentary, but it's like, if it doesn't, so what? You know what I mean? I'm not watching it for that. I'm not spending $30 for like a, you know, a couple good extras. I'm paying for the movie itself.
Yeah. And then, so the next one I have is The Great Silence, a spaghetti Western classic that came out also from Eureka in the UK. And, you know, this has been out in Germany and in the US, and it's the same transfer as the US release, but it really, they went all out on the extras. It has three distinct audio commentaries on it. So, you know, for those who are a fan of the movie, you can really dive deep. But on my list here, I get another spaghetti Western release just for kicks, and it's the it's Arrow Video's Vengeance Trail spaghetti Western box set. And that's a box with, I want to say, they're not B grade, but they're, and also not necessarily lesser knowns, but there's, I think it's four or five good ones that, you know, you might have missed, and they're just great. To fulfill like your spaghetti Western thirst, I have to say. And then there's another box that they put out, I think simultaneously, I'm not sure, it's the Years of Lead.
Oh yeah, Years of Lead. That's the
Italian crime movies. So both of these box sets are, I mean, client purchases. I mean, they're both great. There's an interesting set of movies. Some interesting extras, and if you get the first pressings of Arrow releases, usually the first pressings are those with the booklet and all this stuff.
Oh yeah.
And if they usually do a second pressing of the box sets, that just, they come without the booklet or the posters, but they're just the same box sets anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
So and then to round off this list are Wild Search, as I mentioned in my earlier list, or they also released Full Alert. So if you like Hong Kong movies, these are excellent. The quality is excellent. They got some interesting extras on it. The covers look nice too. Like, they commissioned new cover designs for the
Releases. That's cool.
And you can, and they have a flip cover, so you can also put in the original poster motif if you, you know, want to put them in your shelf like. And I think the last one I want to mention, like an honorable mention, is either the Criterion Wong Kar Wai box set, or if you want to, because it doesn't have 4K, but in Germany they're releasing them separately and in 4K. So the Happy Together, which I absolutely love, and In the Mood for Love, these are the two that are already out there in 4K. And I'm not 100% sure if they're like super English friendly. I would have to check and put that in the show notes. But if you want your Wong Kar Wai in 4K, then at the moment, at least
Wong Kar Wai fix.
If you need your fix, I think at least for the moment, the only option you have is importing the German discs, because they're 4K. Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, those are kind of my picks. I think they're all like excellent.
Yeah, those are good. Really good.
I mean, there's been some criticism, and there usually is with Criterion releasing their discs, and there's been some revisionism going on there with Wong Kar Wai tweaking some of his stuff, and some folks are unhappy, but you know what? They're his movies, so, you know, fuck it.
True. Yeah, I know. It's like, you know, the director gets the final word.
Yeah,
not Joe Schmo.
Yeah, it's true. So yeah, I mean,
that was a pretty good. That's, you know, pretty good list of movies.
Yeah. So and I'm really looking forward.
You might like them. You might not. Oh well.
I'm really looking.
Those are our picks.
Forward to this year, because we already have a bunch of things already in our release calendar at the Grindhouse Cinema Database, at the Spaghetti Western Database. And then all the movie blogs you might be following. I think there's some really excellent stuff coming out this year.
I mean, do you know how many? I think there was like over 600 movies that we went through, like Blu-rays. That's how many movies were out in 20. I mean, you know, that's kind of tough to like go through like 600, over 600 movies and like pick out five. I mean, you know, you could like, you could just buy everything. It's, I don't know. I went with like the ones that I would like want to rewatch the most, or like the ones that I, the ones that are actually my favorite movies. I didn't really look at the extras very much. You know, I keep going saying that, but that's really what I was going by. I wasn't going by like, oh yeah, this movie is okay, but it has like, you know, these awesome extras. I was like really going by movies that I would like want on my shelf in like 20 years. You know what I mean? That type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I have to say that, you know, even though, you know, times might be tough and COVID and everything, but for just in terms of movies, these are some exciting times because it can get a lot of stuff that, you know, that's being dug up and restored and being reappreciated, whether it's some obscure grindhouse movie that played, or like even a, you know, X-rated, you know, erotic, almost porn movie, or just a kung fu movie.
There's all types of stuff, but it's also a thing like where, you know, these lists of like the Blu-rays, these are really for like the hardcore collectors. If you're not like a collector, you don't have to go out and buy these. I mean, you know, unless it's more of like, if you're like a real film buff and you like, you love like classic films, that's where like really where I'm coming through with my list. Like not every title is going to be like a thing where you have to have it type thing. You know what I mean? Unless you're like, you're already doing it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. But what I do sometimes though is like, I buy them, I watch them, and then I sell them again. And it's,
you can do that too, I guess.
For some folks who don't have access to maybe the niche streaming services that.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
I know you use them, but for some folks, it might be easier to just buy them and treat them well and then sell them at mint condition. And it might make sense, you know, in monetary terms for a nice evening with like a bunch of friends. You watch some obscure movie and you might have, you know, it might cost you 15 or 20 bucks, but maybe you're going to be reselling it at 12 or 13 bucks or so.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
And then somebody else can enjoy them because they got them used, but you know, they're still great condition. I mean, they're discs, they don't get bad from playing them. So that's how I approach it. And then obviously we're both interested in everyone's opinions, and leave us comments and feedback under whether we post this on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and whatever, and we do look forward to maybe we missed some really excellent things, so we'll have to
try to do like podcasts more like frequently too, because this one was like a big gap between the last one. When was the last one, like 3 months ago or something, 2 months ago? I don't know.
Yeah, I think October. Yeah.
That was like the Big Lebowski one. I can't even remember what the last episode was.
Yeah, no, the Walter Hill.
Oh yeah, the Walter Hill. So I was like, we have to do them like a little more frequently, so we're not like, you know, waiting so long. That's another.
Yeah, this year is going to be exciting. There's going to be lots of stuff to watch and rewatch, and we'll talk about those. And we look forward to everyone's feedback, like how
we'll do the show notes and stuff.
Both in terms of titles, what everyone found interesting. Which titles maybe we missed, or we, you know, there's some hidden gems that we, you know, do like for whoever's watching, do point us to some interesting titles that you found interesting.
And, we want to know what you're watching too. So,
I think that's it for this episode.
We're signing
from the projection booth of Fury Cinema.
Alrighty then. So it was great talking to you again, and we'll catch up again, hopefully sooner than later. And we'll pick another good topic. Maybe like, since we've done our big list show, we can maybe go back to like maybe doing one movie or something and just cover that next time.
Another deep dive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another deep dive on like one film or something like that, or maybe two movies or whatever. We'll figure out something. But all right, so it was great talking to you, Seb, and we'll be signing off. This is Pete Roberts, and you've been listening to the Furious Cinema Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Adios.
Adios.
And that's that.